on CJSF 90.1 FM. This has been Speak Up.
90.1 FM, broadcasting to you live from Burnaby Mountain.
Democracy Now's on.
Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! The climate crisis, the curtailment of reproductive rights, authoritarianism, these threats aren't looming. They're here now. If you believe Democracy Now!'s reporting on these issues is essential, please sign up for a monthly gift of $5, $10, or even $20. Go to democracynow.org to make your donation right away. Oh, and your gift will be matched dollar for dollar by a generous donor. Thank you so much. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
Joe Biden doesn't belong on a picket line. He belongs on the unemployment line.
And you know who else is missing in action? Donald Trump is missing in action. He should be on this stage tonight. He owes it to you to defend his record.
Missing in action, Donald Trump faces criticism from his Republican rivals after he skips the second presidential primary debate. We'll air excerpts of the debate and speak to former presidential candidate Ralph Nader about Trump and the 2024 race.
One thing about Trump's being a serial law violator is that he does it day after day. He does it overtly. He does it brazenly. Here's the person who said in July 2019, quote, "Then I have Article 2 where I have the right to do anything I want as president," end quote. He later insisted that the Constitution should be, quote, "terminated."
Plus, we speak to David Dayen of the American Prospect about the U.S. government's landmark lawsuit against Amazon and the growing calls for Senator Bob Menendez to resign after he was indicted for bribery. Now at least 30 Democrats want him out. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Seven Republican presidential candidates squared off at the Ronald Reagan Presidential Library in California Wednesday at the party's second primary debate. But once again, the race's frontrunner, Donald Trump, did not participate. He was criticized multiple times for skipping the debate. This is former New Jersey Governor Chris Christie.
And I want to look at that camera right now and tell you, Donald, I know you're watching. You can't help yourself. I know you're watching, okay? And you're not here tonight, not because of polls and not because of your indictments. You're not here tonight because you're afraid of being on the stage and defending your record. You're ducking these things. And let me tell you what's going to happen. You keep doing that, no one up here is going to call you Donald Trump anymore. We're going to call you Donald Duck.
We'll take a closer look at the second Republican presidential debate with former presidential candidate Ralph Nader after headlines. Instead of going to the debate, Trump headed to Detroit, Michigan, where he spoke at a non-union auto parts supplier. Trump's visit came a day after President Biden made history as the first sitting president to join striking auto workers on the picket line. During a rally Wednesday, Trump called for unions to support him in 2024.
Do me a favor. Just get your union guys, your leaders, to endorse me. Okay? And I'll take care of the rest.
Very deliberate. UAW President Sean Fain refused to meet with Trump during his trip to Detroit. Fain said, quote, "I see no point in meeting with him because I don't think the man has any bit of care about what our workers stand for, what the working class stands for. He serves a billionaire class, and that's what's wrong with this country," Fain said. In Las Vegas, unionized hospitality workers overwhelmingly voted to authorize a citywide strike against hotels and casinos. Amidst record industry profits in recent years, hospitality workers are demanding wage increases, on-the-job safety protections, more humane workloads, increased job security and training on new technology, as well as protections if technology displaces workers. The U.S. U.S. government appears to be barreling toward another shutdown as House Speaker Kevin McCarthy's refusing to bring a Senate stopgap bill to the floor for a vote and doesn't have enough support to pass his own short-term House measure. Many Republicans oppose the short-term Senate bill in part because it contains aid for Ukraine and disaster relief. McCarthy remains beholden to the far-right faction of his caucus, which is pushing for steep cuts to social spending that would hit essential food programs, education, and housing. Missouri Democratic Congressmember Cori Bush said, quote, MAGA math is cutting food assistance for millions of children and families while simultaneously increasing tax cuts for billionaires. Once again, Republicans' greed is taking the food out of hungry children's mouths. Shameful, she said. House Speaker McCarthy had previously agreed to current spending levels as part of the debt ceiling deal. Meanwhile, government workers are bracing to again lose their paychecks. This is Everett Kelly, head of the union representing federal workers.
It's a detriment to our economy. It's a detriment to our communities and to the workforce. And we need to be stable. We need to be able to know that we got a job and that we're able to provide for our families.
The government will shut down midnight on Saturday if no deal is reached. Meanwhile, far-right Republican Marjorie Taylor Greene passed an amendment to the defense bill to reduce U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin's salary to $1. The president of the self-declared Republic of Nagorno-Karabakh says the government of the contested region will dissolve itself by January 1st. The announcement comes just days after Azerbaijan carried out a military blitz to seize the territory, which is mostly made up of ethnic Armenians. Over 50,000 people in Nagorno-Karabakh have fled to Armenia in recent days. That's more than half the region's population. On Wednesday, Azerbaijan arrested the former head of the Nagorno-Karabakh government as he was trying to cross into Armenia. Burkina Faso's military leaders say the country's security and intelligence services thwarted a coup attempt by rogue officers. Burkina Faso is currently ruled by interim president Ibrahim Traoré, an army captain who himself seized power a year ago following a military coup. The junta vowed to hold democratic elections by July next year. Earlier this week, hundreds of people took to the streets in the capital to show their support for the military leadership. A U.S. soldier who crossed into North Korea in July has arrived back in the United States after being expelled by Pyongyang. U.S. Army Private Travis King had been held for 2 months after crossing the DMZ. North Korean authorities had said King, who is black, had, quote, harbored ill feeling against inhuman maltreatment and racial discrimination within the U.S. Army and was disillusioned about the unequal U.S. society, unquote. The White House thanked the Swedish embassy in Pyongyang and the Chinese government for their role in facilitating his release and return home. It's unclear what disciplinary action King may now face by the military. Meanwhile, North Korea's parliament voted to enshrine its nuclear weapons program as part of the North Korean constitution. The United States has admitted Israel into its visa waiver program. It joins 40 other countries which enjoy visa-free travel to the U.S. The move was quickly met with condemnation from Palestinian rights activists. Author and journalist Ali Abu Nima said it was, quote, rewarding and encouraging Jewish supremacist apartheid, ethnic cleansing, and racial terror against Palestinians, unquote. Meanwhile, James Zogby, the president of the Arab American Institute, said in a statement, quote, by prioritizing a political perk to a foreign country over the equal rights and safety of American citizens, the Biden administration's agreed to continue blatant discrimination against Arab Americans, including Palestinian Americans and others who advocate for Palestinian human rights, Zogby said. In Ethiopia, local researchers say they verified over 1,300 hunger deaths in the war-torn northern Tigray region since the November ceasefire was enacted. A major contributing factor is the suspension of food aid by the U.S. and the U.N. after they said food supplies were being seized by military units. The Ethiopian government has faced accusations of weaponizing humanitarian aid. Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau has formally apologized after he and the House of Commons gave a standing ovation to a Canadian-Ukrainian veteran who fought in a Nazi SS unit during World War II. 98-year-old Yaroslav Hanka was honored on Friday during a visit by Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky, who also applauded him. He'd been invited by the Speaker of the House of Commons, Anthony Rota, who had since resigned from his post. Trudeau spoke Wednesday.
The Speaker was solely responsible for the invitation and recognition of this man and has wholly accepted that responsibility and stepped down. This was a mistake that has deeply embarrassed Parliament and Canada. All of us who were in this House on Friday regret deeply having stood and clapped, even though we did so unaware of the context.
Prime Minister Trudeau made the apology after Canada's Conservative leader, Pierre Poilievre, described the event honoring the former Nazi soldier as the biggest single diplomatic embarrassment in Canada's history. In the Netherlands, a massive climate protest is now in its 20th day as activists blockade the A12, a major highway. Over 6,000 people have been arrested since the action started. Activists are demanding the Dutch government end its over $40 billion in annual subsidies for fossil fuel companies. Demonstrators say police are using increasingly violent tactics to quell their movement. Extinction Rebellion Netherlands is taking authorities to court in a bid to ban the use of water cannons against peaceful protesters. Meanwhile, in the UK, climate activists have slammed its government after it gave the green light to develop its largest untapped oil field in the North Sea, just off the northwest coast of the Shetland Islands. The Rosebank project will be operated by Norwegian company Equinor and British firm Ithaca Energy. This is climate lawyer and director of the group Uplift, Tessa Khan.
That if we're going to stay within a safe climate, which is that internationally agreed goal of 1.5 degrees of temperature rise, there is no room for new oil and gas fields. Existing oil and gas reserves and fossil fuel infrastructure are enough to take us past that critical threshold. So we simply can't afford to add more oil and gas to that existing pile.
In Strasbourg, France, a historic hearing unfolded Wednesday at the European Court of Human Rights as six young people from Portugal challenged 33 European governments over their failure to combat the climate crisis, which they argue is a violation of their human rights. This is one of the lawyers for the Portuguese youth who brought the lawsuit.
Today's case is about the young. It is about the price that they are paying for the failure of states to tackle the climate emergency. It is about the harm that they will suffer during their lifetimes unless states step up to their responsibilities.
The youth lawsuit is being closely followed by climate activists around the world. If successful, the 33 countries could be legally required to rapidly reduce their greenhouse gas emissions. A ruling is expected in the first half of next year. New Jersey Senator Bob Menendez, his wife, and two of his business associates have pleaded not guilty to federal bribery and extortion charges. Menendez was indicted Friday, accused of using his position to increase U.S. assistance to Egypt and to do favors for New Jersey businessmen in exchange for mortgage payments, a luxury car, bars of gold, and thousands of dollars in cash. It's the second time in under a decade Menendez has been indicted on federal bribery and corruption charges. He's refused calls from at least 30 fellow Democrats to resign. And in Philadelphia, protesters took to the streets after a judge dismissed all charges, including first-degree murder, against former police officer Mark Dial in the August killing of Eddie Irizarry. Dial fatally shot Irizarry at a near point-blank range as he sat in his car after being pulled over. Prosecutors have vowed to appeal the ruling. Irizarry was reportedly suffering from mental health challenges at the time. His family expressed outrage following the ruling. This is his aunt speaking to the Philadelphia Inquirer.
The way I feel, the way the family feel, is everybody's upset because of the decision that this judge made today. You know, she said we didn't have, the DA didn't have enough evidence. Torres, though, how much evidence more do you need? If the evidence was there, all the videos was there, the whole city have all the videos. So for you to sit here and say it was not enough evidence, then that was wrong. You know, it proved today that a police officer can kill somebody and get away with murder.
And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. Coming up, we are excerpts of the second Republican presidential debate, well, without President Trump, and speak to former presidential candidate Ralph Nader about the 2024 elections, Trump and Biden. Stay with us. Roses, music from the movie Idiocracy. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. We begin today's show with the second Republican presidential primary debate of the 2024 race. Seven contenders faced off Wednesday night at the Ronald Reagan Presidential Library in Simi Valley, California. As with the first debate, the Republican frontrunner, former President Donald Trump, did not attend. He met with workers at a non-union auto parts factory in the battleground state of Michigan, where he attacked President Biden's support for electric cars one day after Biden's visit to Detroit, when he became the first sitting president in U.S. history to stand with auto workers on the picket line. During the debate, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis said Trump was missing in action, and former New Jersey Governor Chris Christie tried out a new nickname for Trump.
And I want to look at that camera right now and tell you, Donald, I know you're watching. You can't help yourself. I know you're watching, okay? And you're not here tonight, not because of polls and not because of your indictments. You're not here tonight because you're afraid of being on the stage and defending your record. You're ducking these things. And let me tell you what's going to happen. You keep doing that, no one up here is going to call you Donald Trump anymore. We're going to call you Donald Duck.
For much of the debate, criticism focused on Democrats as the candidates spoke over each other and over the moderators. This is former Vice President Mike Pence and Chris Christie responding to moderator Ilya Calderon of Univision.
The government will shut down if Congress does not reach a deal by the end of this week. Vice President Pence warns that politics of, quote, Trump's populist proteges like Mr. Ramaswamy are a road to ruin for the GOP. If the government shuts down, should voters blame populist Republicans?
Voters should blame everybody who's in Washington, D.C. They get sent down there to do the job, and they've been failing at doing the job for a very long time. And let's be honest about this with the voters. You know, during the Trump administration, they added $7 trillion. $7 trillion in national debt. And now the Biden administration has put another $5 trillion on and counting. They have failed, and they're in the spot they're in now because none of them are willing to tell the truth. None of them are willing to take on the difficult issues. They just want to keep kicking the can down the road. And the inflation that Nikki spoke about is absolutely right, and it's caused by government spending. And that's why people all across this country are suffering tonight. And yet we don't get any answers because Joe Biden hides. in his basement and won't answer as to why he's raising the debt the way he's done. And Donald Trump hides behind the walls of his golf clubs and won't show up here to answer questions like all the rest of us are up here to answer. He put $7 trillion on the debt. He should be in this room to answer those questions for the people you talk about who are suffering. And if the government closes, it's the blame. It is to the blame of everyone in Washington, D.C., who has failed to do their job and just plays to the grandstand.
Governor DeSantis, you haven't spoken. Please.
The people in Washington are shutting down the American dream with their reckless behavior. They borrowed, they printed, they spent, and now you're paying more for everything. They are the reason for that. They have shut down our national sovereignty by allowing our border to be wide open. So please spare me the crocodile tears for these people. They need to change what's going on. And where's Joe Biden? He's completely missing in action from leadership. And you know who else is missing in action? Donald Trump is missing in action. He should be on this stage tonight. He owes it to you to defend his record, where they added $7.8 trillion to the debt. That set the stage for the inflation that we have. Now, I can tell you this, as governor of Florida, we cut taxes, we ran surpluses, we've paid down over 25% of our state debt, and I vetoed wasteful spending when it came to my desk. And as your president, when they send me a bloating spending bill that's going to cause your prices to go up, I'm going to take out this veto pen, and I'm going to send it right back to them.
That was Republican Florida Governor Ron DeSantis. The economy is one of the debate's main topics. This is the moderator, Dana Perino, of Fox News. She's a former White House press spokesperson for President George W. Bush, and her fellow moderator, Fox Business host Stuart Varney, with South Carolina Senator Tim Scott responding first.
Americans want to believe a leader who says, "You can follow me. I've got you. Don't worry." President Biden is trying to do that with Bidenomics.
And yesterday, he joined the picket lines where auto workers are demanding more wages and job security. Senator Scott, you recently reacted by praising Ronald Reagan for firing air traffic controllers in the 1980s, saying, "You strike, you're fired." Would you fire thousands of striking auto workers today, Senator?
Obviously, the President of the United States cannot fire anybody in the private sector. However, we should look back at the first bill in Congress under Joe Biden. The first bill had $86 billion for the union pensions because they continue to overpromise yet underdeliver. One of the challenges that we have in the current negotiations is that they want four-day French work weeks, but more money. They want more benefits, working fewer hours. That is simply not going to stand. I sat in a finance committee hearing when a widow came before the committee who was promised pensions from the unions, $4,000 a month. Unfortunately, it had been cut to $1,000 a month. We must make sure that we honor the commitments that we make, and one of the ways that we do that, do not overpromise and then underdeliver and leave the taxpayers on the hook. I'll say this, Joe Biden should not be on the picket line. He should be on the southern border working to close our southern border because it is unsafe, wide open, and insecure, leading to the deaths of 70,000 Americans in the last 12 months because of fentanyl. It is devastating. Every county in America is now a border county because fentanyl has devastated Americans in every single state. I will also say 6 million illegal crossings since Joe Biden has taken office, and he eliminated Title 42. The one thing he should do is finish the wall, reinstate Title 42, and get the job done.
Well, I can promise you that we are going to have a lot of questions on the border and immigration. But in the meantime, we do want to talk about the economy and jobs, and especially want to talk about this strike for just a moment more.
Together, the CEOs of General Motors, Ford, and Stellantis make 336 times the number of rank and file workers. That's just part of a wider income inequality trend in the country. The richest 1% now controls one-fifth of all income. Vice President Pence, last week you said you side with American workers. but you also support how these companies operate. Which is it?
Well, thank you for the question. I want to thank Univision and Fox Business for assembling such a wonderful forum. Look, I do disagree with something Tim Scott just said. Joe Biden doesn't belong on a picket line. He belongs on the unemployment line. I mean, look, I'm from the second leading manufacturing state in the country per capita. I was governor of the state of Indiana. We brought 12,000 factories back to America during our administration. I know something about manufacturing. And I got to tell you, while the union bosses are talking about class warfare and talking about disparity in wages, I have to tell you, I really believe what's driving that is Bidenomics has failed. Wages are not keeping up with inflation. Auto workers and all American workers are feeling it. Families are struggling in this economy. And Joe Biden's Green New Deal agenda is good for Beijing and bad for Detroit. We ought to repeal the Green New Deal, get rid of the mandates and subsidies that are driving American gasoline automotive manufacturing into the graveyard. And beyond that also, as President of the United States, I'll be standing with workers all across America, and I'll be standing for the right to work of every American to join a union or not join a union as they decide.
That was Trump's former vice president, Mike Pence. During the debate, New Jersey governor, former governor Chris Christie, also criticized President Biden's support for teachers' unions, prompting this exchange with Pence.
What we did was institute more charter schools and more Renaissance schools and more public school choice in New Jersey with innovative solutions in cities like Camden, where now we took what was the worst school district in America during my time, and we have now increased that by nearly 40% in terms of their proficiency. It can be done when you give people choice. But let's tell the truth to everybody about what this is. This public school system is no longer run by the public. It is run by the teachers' unions in this country. Randy Weingarten and her crew are absolutely strangling. They are taking the worst of their members and defending them rather than advocating for our kids. And when you have the President of the United States sleeping with a member of the teachers' union, there is no chance that you could take the stranglehold away from the teachers' union every day. They have an advocate inside the White House every day for the worst of their teachers, not for our students to be the best they can be. A President of the United States has to take on the teachers' union. I did it in New Jersey, and I will do it as President of the United States.
Because by way of full disclosure, Chris, you mentioned the president's situation. My wife isn't a member of the teachers' union, but I got to admit, I've been sleeping with a teacher for 38 years.
To discuss last night's second Republican debate of 2024 and more, we're joined by Ralph Nader, longtime consumer advocate, corporate critic, and former presidential candidate, also founder of the Capitol Hill Citizen newspaper, which has a new issue out. Ralph Nader is the author of many books, including the forthcoming book, The Rebellious CEO, 12 Leaders Who Did It Right. Ralph, welcome back to Democracy Now! Wow, that's the way they address education. Is Chris Christie accuses President Biden of sleeping with Dr. Jill Biden, his wife. Anyway, why don't you summarize your response to last night's debate?
Well, like the first debate, it's pretty embarrassing that this is what they put forward to become president of the most powerful country in the world. We have a political system that does not bring out the best in the American people and doesn't bring out the best in candidates. Saturday midnight, the government is going to probably close down. There wasn't much talk about that. That's a pretty serious problem. Millions of workers depend on federal contracts in districts all over the country. Federal grants support major social safety nets for children, for disadvantaged people, for disabled people. All that's going to be suspended. And it doesn't matter, red state, blue state. All these people who will be cut off from federal programs of various kinds, and we know how many there are, that go into every district, all these people, whether they're conservatives or liberals, all these families are going to bleed the same color. And there wasn't much discussion about how a dozen right-wing Republicans are basically controlling Speaker McCarthy and heading the federal government into a shutdown. But beyond that, they seem just to be reacting to the headlines of the day. They don't talk about the structural weakening of our democratic society. They don't talk about the distortion of public budgets based on a distorted tax system that undertaxed the very wealthy and the corporate like never before, the Trump tax cuts in 2017.